This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Well, quite an interesting week in the commodity markets as we move into the back half of August, and the industry awaits the upcoming Midwest Crop Tour this coming week. Welcome to Market Talk. Thanks so much for joining us here today. Appreciate the time as always. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, as we take a look at the markets and issues impacting rural America here on the program. Thanks again for joining us. Yeah, very interesting week here in the market trade. We started the week with plenty of liquidation in the market, especially in the grain trade. Then we kind of found some buying back midweek. And then as we got towards the end of the week, we saw a little more just quiet activity ahead of that upcoming crop tour through the Midwest here this coming week. We saw the wheat markets take a bit of a beating, then start to rally heading into the weekend with some of the news coming out of the Black Sea region, more issues between Russia and Ukraine, talk of Russia shutting down parts of a huge nuclear power plant in southern Ukraine and taking it off the Ukrainian power grid. So a lot of concerns there in the market trade. That really felt like it helped prop up the wheat markets on Friday. There's just plenty of news out there. Soybeans, of course, that market being impacted by everything going on between the U.S. and China over Taiwan, as fund money has really just kind of been moving around here in these markets. We're going to discuss the market trade as we wrapped up the week. Joining us today, Christy Van On Sheseth of Van On Company is going to be with us coming up here in segment 2 and 3 to discuss and give us her thoughts on everything we've seen in the market trade, grains into livestock and the broader market sector. We're going to have a great conversation with Christy coming up here, as it'll be her first time in the chair here at Market Talk. So we appreciate her joining us today. That is coming up here on the show. Also, we're going to take a look at South America, some worries about the Brazil's second corn crop that's wrapping up harvest, and maybe some things that could change in the future due to some different issues they're seeing down there. We get comments from Dr. Michael Cordonier of Corn and Soybean Advisors Incorporated. That is coming up at the end of the show today. So we're going to put a little bit of a focus on the South American crops as well. First, though, let's get thoughts on Friday's market action with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at Stone X. And I start my conversation, we talk to Arlen around midday every day, and I asked him about the wheat markets on Friday and their rally that we saw. We then segue into the row crops, and then we also talked about livestock with the Cattle on Feed report out Friday afternoon. Here are the comments from Arlen Suderman of Stone X.
Well, it started off kind of as a technical bounce. We've indicated, told our people here yesterday that, you know, we broke chart support. Now the algos are selling that chart breakdown, and the end users have no reason to step in front of this market until or unless something happens. Well, maybe something's going to happen. At least the market is certainly covering those short positions ahead of the weekend. Europe's largest nuclear plant is in southern Ukraine, and it is the focus this weekend of tensions between Ukraine and Russia. We all hope nothing happens there, but the risk to the wheat market would be significant if an accident were to happen there and we would have some type of nuclear leak, shall we say. And so the markets are covering some of their short positions, and momentum traders are feeding on that to amplify the moves higher.
Corn and soybeans, Arlen, feel fairly quiet heading to the weekend. We're kind of drifting maybe with not a whole lot of fresh news out there. Corn a little higher, beans a little lower. Any thoughts in the row crops here as we head to the weekend?
Well, I think that's a good way of summarizing it. And we're seeing some spread trading between corn and soybeans, but this market is just kind of consolidating going into the weekend. Next week is the big Midwest crop tour, where the industry will be spreading out and driving across the Midwest, and both the West and the East coming together in the middle, assessing the crops, walking the fields, sampling crops. And so it'll give us a good influx of fundamental information about how the weather has impacted this year's crops. And generally, the thinking is that soybeans maybe not hurt as bad as what is corn, and so we're seeing corn kind of get the better edge of the spread trades between the two today, supporting corn, and the strength in the wheat supporting corn as well.
Arlen, over in the protein sector, I know we've had a couple down days in hogs here this week, some liquidation there, seeing maybe a bit more of that here on the day today. And then in cattle, kind of mixed trade there, feeders a little lower with corn up a bit and live cattle mixed. We have that cattle on feed report this afternoon as well. I know the industry, the trade is going to be watching that closely, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. And generally expecting that on feed numbers are up a little less than 1% from previous year, whereas placements are down a little bit more than 1% from year ago levels. But as we look at this cattle market, really supported by the cash market, we saw cash cattle trade as high as 142 in Texas yesterday. And that's even above where the expiring August contract is trading at. So that's a big difference from where we've been at. As we look over at the hog complex, this market has seen a lot of fund liquidation of late. And even though we're looking at a $27 discount now between the October contract versus the cash hog index, the product market has been under a lot of pressure lately, and the futures market is kind of following the product market lower, expecting that we're going to see a collapse in the cash market over the next 7 weeks.
And once again, that is Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX, getting thoughts on market action, price action with Arlen. Around midday on Friday, we talked to Arlen and got his thoughts on the trade as we wrapped up the week. Well, farmers stressed that the pressures they are facing with fertilizer prices, including import tariffs, as well as Mexico's stance on genetically engineered crops and the need for continued access to foreign markets. They did that as Iowa Congresswoman Cindy Axne hosted U.S. Trade Ambassador Catherine Tai and Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack on Thursday. Farmers representing at least a dozen agricultural groups met with the two Biden administration cabinet members as they championed the recently signed legislation on energy and climate change, as well as a semiconductor legislation and infrastructure. Now, Tai said, highlighting the Inflation Reduction Act, quote, a state like Iowa is already a leader in ethanol, biodiesel, and wind power. This law will further our leadership. But again, farmers concerned about many things. Farmers spoke more about high input prices. Sam Spellman, who hosted the event in his machine shed, told Tai that some details on worst-case scenarios should be provided when tariffs are enacted. He said, quote, tariffs sometimes are quite disruptive to our farming operations, end quote. Farmers, members of Congress have repeatedly called on the administration to waive the 20% tariffs on phosphate from Morocco that the ITC placed on Morocco in spring of 2021. Another issue, again, is Mexico's biotech policies. Bob House, representing Corteva, which employs about 3,000 people in central Iowa, raised the issue with officials over Mexico's delays on refusals to approve 14 biotech crop traits involving corn, soybeans, and cotton. Lance Lillibridge, president of the Iowa Corn Growers Association, said that Mexico is the top U.S. market for corn and dry distillers grain exports. Lillibridge said he is concerned about statements and executive orders that Mexican President Andres Lopez Obrador has made about biotech crops. Lillibridge said, quote, with these decrees, farmers are very, very concerned about what will happen, end quote. So again, this all happened on Thursday at an Iowa farm, and a lot of discussions definitely still being watched here on many of these issues. All right, coming up next, we'll talk with Christy Van On. She's at the Van On Company. Back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now as we take a look at the market trade wrapping up the week and looking at Friday's trade action and much more. Joining us for the first time here on Market Talk, Christy Van On Cheeseth with Van On and Company. Christy, great to have you on the show. Welcome in. How are you?
I'm good. It's such a pleasure. This is fun.
Well, I appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us, Christy. Let's dive right in. Let's just start kind of overall your thoughts with the grains and oil seeds as we wrapped up the week. It was kind of an interesting week, it felt like. We started with a lot of selling pressure early. Quarter beans kind of tried to find their way back, and then we're pretty quiet to wrap the week on Friday. Wheat found some buying strength after some selling off, some selling pressure midweek. We found maybe a bounce on Friday. I don't know. It just kind of felt interesting. It felt like, again, another volatile week in the grain markets.
Yeah, it's a struggle for the grains to really rally through August in the beginning. Usually August through, you know, September is a tough time. So I think that's consistently like lingering in the background. Anytime the market really wants to get up and going, like you saw it last week, you have those sellers come in and say, seasonally, this is just not the time to rally. And I think that's kind of what you saw in here. We got rain forecasted for a lot of the drier areas. You had a great system, a very slow system, move through some of the driest areas of Iowa, great for their beans. You had some moisture into the eastern parts of the Dakotas, even into the western parts of Minnesota. Here in Alexandria, Minnesota, we've really struggled to get some moisture over the last few weeks, and we needed it, and we got it over the last 2 days. Nothing ton, but probably an inch over the last few days in good rains. So I think that kind of gave the market a risk off as you started to bring in the moisture. But we're in a time frame that's hard, but we're also in a point where we have a crop that's not huge, and it's not really, really small. And we're trying to decipher how to pick out these levels and what do we do. And a lot of times when you're lacking some technical information, you can go back to fundamentals. And that's what we had was USDA come in here, slash corn yield, increased bean yield. And I think that caught the market off guard to say, all right, USDA, you're forecasting 0.1 BPA off a record. And we had a very late crop. We had 15 million bushel that was not planted in their survey window. So we knew that they chose to resurvey. We know that those are late planted. And we know that there's a good chunk of beans into the Western Corn Belt that's been really dry. Between North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska, 20% of bean acres are in those areas. And they've been so dry. And you've started to have it. It's not as bad as last year for the Dakotas, but it is still an issue. So I think you kind of have that. And so beans have been holding a key level of support around $14. So their 200-day moving average is just shy of 14. And I think that's a level that we're really going to zone into and kind of be a magnet to for a while until we get some sort of different information. I think Pro Farmer Tour next week is going to be the perfect week to have it coming into this market to give us a better idea on, you know, did USDA justify their drops? And what do we see with pod counts? So I think that's going to be a big thing to watch. But right now, it seems like technicals want to be the force. They want to hold support. And then when you look at the December corn market, we're really not getting anywhere. Slightly lower on the week, but overall, we're really nestling into the 620 level and holding strong. And I wouldn't be surprised that if you sit here or maybe trend even a little bit lower with seasonals until you get closer to harvest. And then after that, I think once we discover what's in this crop, I think you have the potential to see that demand start to show up and get back into the story of, hey, we have a smaller crop. We can't let it all go away. And so it's going to be an interesting late fall into early 2023 for me.
Well, you mentioned the upcoming Pro Farmer Crop Tour, and I think as well with the USDA numbers that we saw, you know, those were as of August 1st, and we've seen maybe some more deterioration since then. So I wonder, and I'm with you, I think the crop tour, depending on what we see, could have a real big influence. And I think, you know, to a couple of your points, some of those rains, I think they helped out soybeans in many of those areas. Still, you know, the chance to kind of make the bean crop. Corn, relative, I think corn is going to be probably what it is, maybe adding some test weight with some of those rains. But otherwise, I just wonder what this crop tour is going to show us. Is it going to show some mass deterioration in some of those western states, or is it going to be about close to what USDA saw? And I'm wondering, maybe what have you heard from some of your clients in parts of that region, just how their crop is looking as we head into that crop tour?
Yeah, I think the general consensus is that the crop looks good, you know, even for the drier areas of beans. I don't know if that's maybe, you know, through the Dakotas that their crop was so poor last year. I think they're saying, hey, anything's better than last year. But you do still have that issue that everyone's for the most part saying the crop's really good. Now you check on social media, you can see that guys go out into the field, the cobs aren't there, they have tip back, they're having pollination issues. We were very hot during pollination. We were recently down through southern Minnesota into parts of northern Iowa, and things looked good from the road. And that's the difference. Is that's why I think it's so important for a pro farmer at this point, is that things do look good from the road. Obviously, USDA is seeing something different, that they're choosing to decrease that corn yield. And not only USDA, but satellite imagery has had some very small yields. FBN, DTN, both of those have been very, very friendly yields. They have stated that it is trending higher for the yield for corn, but at this point it's lower. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing, is to get in there, see what's in field. I look at last year and we had some major problem areas. You know, the Dakotas were just absolutely fried. Minnesota was absolutely fried. Where we are in our neck of the woods in central Minnesota, west central Minnesota, if you did not have a pivot, your crop was toast. There was nothing you could do about it. And so I struggle to say the crop is going to be that much lower, considering we had major problems this year. Not everything is perfect, but it seems like the areas that are poor do seem to be smaller. I think we also know that seed genetics have put a ton of money into drought tolerance. And that's what we had this year in a lot of these areas. So how well do these hold up? And then also we know that the plant is really good at conserving what it needs. And you can come in here and say these areas that are dry, the Dakotas, Nebraska, maybe not Nebraska, but the Dakotas did come in with moisture into planting. They came in quite a bit of moisture. They couldn't get planted. There was so much. And so you wonder, is that going to kind of benefit that crop along the way? So there's a lot of unknowns yet, but overall, I think that over this next 3 weeks, you know, you get Pro Farmer, and then this next September report is going to be USDA's first report that they're actually boots on the ground. I think both of those are going to be a unique look. And typically you can see some really big shifts in a report from a satellite imagery to a farmer survey. And so I think that's something to watch. But the biggest thing for me to focus on is that we want to talk production. It's a huge aspect right now. It's great to talk about. But also when you look at it, USDA has kind of pegged its balance sheet really well to be able to blend off yield increases and decreases. So you look at corn demand, for example, they're kind of like right down the middle on corn demand, that they could easily increase or decrease areas of that to offset any sort of change. So until we get post-harvest, I'm worried that you're going to just see kind of a balancing act from USDA, that they take away from one area, they add it into the other area, and you're still net result coming in with a carryout level that's pretty similar to what they had. One thing to note is that they did, when they did increase the carryout level, or the the carryout level as well, but the yield for soybeans, they didn't really change that farm price average for soybeans. Mm-hmm. They kept it very similar. And I think that's one thing they're noting, is that you might have changed this dynamic, but they're still expecting to see some strong prices throughout the year.
Well, again, we're having a conversation with Christy Van On Cheeseit with Van On and Company, joining us here today on Market Talk. We're to continue our conversation coming up here after the break with Christy. Want to take a look at closing numbers from Friday's trade action. Let's start with the corn market. September up 6.25, 6.26. December corn 7.5 higher at 6.23.25. March corn up 7.75, 6.30.5. Soybeans September 6.75 lower, 14.88.75. November beans down just 1.25, 14.04. Nice close there. January beans down 3/4, 14.10.75. September bean meal 70 cents a ton lower, 4.48.70. October bean meal down $5 a ton, 4.08. September bean oil 195 points higher, 68.21. October up 177 points on Friday, 66.57. September Chicago wheat 23.5 higher, 7.55. December up 23.5, 7.72.5. September Kansas City wheat up 32.25, 8.44.75. December up 31.75 at 8.47. Spring wheat on Friday's close, September up 22, 874.75. December up 22.25 at 887. Lean hogs, October down 17, 93.12. December down 102, 84.15. February down 170, 87.02. Feeder cattle, August down 2, 181.50. September down 52, 184.75. Live cattle, August up 32, 141.60. October up 50, 145.25. December live cattle up 42, 150.97. We'll continue our conversation with Christy Van Onchiseth coming up next. Back with more Market Talk right after this.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. Christy Van Onchiseth with Van On & Company is our guest today here on the program as we continue our conversation. Christy, talk to me a little bit about risk management and just some thoughts. You know, we kind of settled in some ranges here in corn and beans, as you've mentioned. You know, if I'm a producer, I start to have a pretty good idea of what my crop looks like here heading into fall harvest. Maybe I'm a little light on sales. What are some of your thoughts and maybe just a few thoughts on strategy here? Am I looking to maybe sell some cash and own it back on the board later? Am I looking at some put options? What are some different things that you would think farmers need to look at in their situation here?
I think the biggest thing is what has to go to town at harvest, right? So I am hoping that majority of what needs to go to town at harvest is sold. We're 60% marketed some way, somehow on both corn and soybeans for this crop. And one of the biggest things I'm focusing on right now is beans that have to go to town. If you look around central to west central area that we're in, the bean yield is very strong. You have a lot of end processors that are 20 under for harvest basis right now on soybeans. A few years ago, we were a dollar under around here for harvest delivery basis. So right away, you're seeing those strong basis levels. We're still at strong prices when you look at it overall for soybeans. I think that's one thing to note is that I'm not opposed to sales at this level. I would not re-own them back right away. That doesn't mean that I'm not bullish by any means, but I'd like to see this $14 level hold. And if it doesn't hold, then you're probably looking at coming back to some of those recent lows where we got into the low 13s. So that's what I'm focusing on beans. Corn's a little bit of a different story. We know that the corn crop isn't going to be huge around us. We had quite a few late starts. We had some shift around acres. We know that the crop isn't all that well around here. I'm surprised that the basis levels haven't been stronger for the corn market. And I don't know if they're giving it a little bit of time to see. But right now, basis levels are a little bit weaker than you anticipate for corn. So I'm being a little patient on corn. If you wanted to, you do have October and November cereals off of December out for options. You could look at some puts. They're still kind of expensive. But right now for corn, I'm going to let it see if this $6 holds. If we start to break $6, I might look at something here, whether that's a sale or a put. But until then, I'm going to let this market do its job, and hopefully we can get back up to those levels. What I'm watching for on the top side would be, you know, we came a spike high of on this recent pullback, 658 on Dease corn. That 650 level is probably where I'd be looking at some more sales. Hopefully we can round out an 8 to a 10 cent carry out to March. March is kind of that time frame I'd like to have my HTAs out. Some guys don't like to deliver in the winter around here, and I don't blame them. But usually you can get some really great basis opportunities for corn into January just because the bin door is shut. And I'm going to be honest, I don't blame them. If I was done with harvest, I worked all year long. It's cold. I'm ready to take a vacation. I wouldn't be delivering grain, but those are some of your best opportunities. So if you can get out to that March contract, that's what I'm really looking for. The wild card here is spring wheat. When you look around here, spring wheat basis is poor. We're well off the highs. We're at levels that we have not seen in almost a year. The last time spring wheat was 850 was back in November of 2021. We've taken all the premium out from Russia and Ukraine. That's where I'm struggling is saying, you know, if you have the room, it might be worth some time, but you also have to be prepared because the charts don't look pretty for wheat.
Let's talk a little more on wheat. You and I were chatting about this before we jumped on air. Wheat's been doing wheat things, for lack of a better term, here this week. And you look at Friday, was it maybe that proverbial bounce to wrap up the week? I know we got some geopolitical issues, some worries about the nuclear power plant in southern Ukraine, but then you watch everything else. And then to your point, you know, looking at spring wheat, I don't know what is going on in this wheat market right now, plus rains in the southern plains that could help out planting here in just a few weeks down there where they've been very dry. So I don't know what to make of this wheat market. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, wheat is troublesome to me because, like I said, you gave up all the premium. So we know that there's still issues in Russia and Ukraine, right? But you start to get these like random tidbits saying, you know, the president of Ukraine coming out and saying that if Russia really wants to end this war, they need to be out of our country, and then we can start to have some talks. And it almost hinted like they were working towards that. And we hope that they've continuously worked towards trying to end the war, but it's really hasn't been something to talk about lately. And now that they're bringing that up, I wonder if you aren't going to have that. But regardless, you took out Russia or Ukraine alone over 12.5 million metric ton of exportable grain and for corn. And so you're taking that out. We know that China's been extremely dry. And so we want to think that maybe that crop is going to need some adjustments, some fine tune. But overall, when you look at Ukraine and Russia, the issue is still there. The problems are still there. You kind of poke the bear with having the U.S. bring people over to Taiwan when you talk about China. And so I really think wheat has the potential to have that story, but until it has that story, the demand is not here for the United States. We can't pick up any demand. Basis is showing that in spring wheat. Spring wheat has a good crop. Like you said, the rains are coming. So you can really make an argument on both sides for the wheat. What's going to be interesting to me is the acre battle moving forward. Is do you really want to be planting the wheat with all of those unknowns? And for winter wheat, if you can get the moisture in there, I think that's a no-brainer. But when you start to talk about spring wheat and you're seeing some other prices that are, you know, getting to the bottom line and you can make money on them if you make those sales, I think it's going to be a struggle for guys to be planting wheat. And even the guys that are harvesting spring wheat right now, discounts for disease issues. And it seems like, you know, wheat to me is something that would be extremely hard to grow because a lot of it is out of your control and you never know what you're going to get docked. You never know what your protein is going to be. And I get that you have unknowns with the rest of the crop, but I feel like spring wheat is a different beast. I always joke because my dad, he's retired now, but he always had a post-it sticker that said, don't trade wheat. And I always go back to that and laugh about it from time to time, because that's what I feel about wheat is it's a big unknown. Right now, if guys are sitting and saying, I have no wheat sold, what do I do? If they have availability on the farm to hold it, I'm going to hold it for a little bit and see if we can round out of this 850 level.
Christy, let's talk a little livestock as well before we run out of time. This hog market, you know, I've been someone who thought that, you know, when August went off the board, the October contract was going to go up towards cash. Well, I think I'm getting proven wrong here this week. This hog market's taking a beating. Any thoughts with what's going on with hogs right now?
Yeah, I am right there with you, actually, when you talk about October coming up to August. It seemed like the feasible way to marry the two contracts is that it would be October coming up to August. We aren't seeing that. I think a couple of reasons we aren't seeing that is funds have been extremely long hogs, and I have a feeling that they're probably liquidating to a degree. And cash trade has been a little bit on the weaker side. It hasn't budged too much, but I think it doesn't give that incentive to get October up and going. But right now, I think the biggest thing for the hog market is actually funds versus anything out of our control more than that.
How about in cattle? I know cattle on feed report here this afternoon. Trade felt on Friday like it was just kind of choppy ahead of that report, which I think is fairly typical. Oh, I mean, we look at some of these price levels. A lot of folks I've talked to have been pretty bullish the cattle market for a few months. What are your thoughts, or what side are you on in this cattle market as you look at things here towards the end of August?
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons to be bullish cattle right now. You know, when you look at it, we have low inventory. Our slaughter pace is a lot higher. Our demand is really strong. There's all those reasons too. Seasonally, we take a little bit of a dip here, but in about a month from now, we fire right back up. So cash is strong. And I think all of those reasons are giving it to you to say, hey, I'm friendly in this market. Managed Money has been buyers of cattle as well. And my only worry is when you look at the feeder cattle market, you know, you're at two standard deviations to the top side for chart action. And when you get that far away from trend line, it brings in some other people. And so I'm a little worried that you might take a look at commodity indexes as a whole and say, all right, what is off of its, what is at its high? What is well off of its high? What do we see as a buy? What do we see as a sell? And I'm afraid that you could potentially see feeder cattle giving that opportunity when you pull up, don't put the name on the chart, just pull up a chart and see it. It's rallied a ton and there's reasons to sell it and there's reasons to be a marketer here, but that's about the only reason you look at it to say this market's going to slow down. Otherwise, as long as demand domestically and worldwide continues to keep pace and we're seeing those lower numbers, I think there's a reason to be cautiously friendly to the cattle markets.
Christy, I've enjoyed this fantastic stuff, and we didn't even get into a couple of my favorite topics, usually the outside markets and talking computer algorithms in this market trade and everything else. But before we run out of time, the open-ended question, as always, any final thoughts you want to share with us or reiterate before we wrap it up?
Yeah, I think maybe the biggest thing to focus on right now is probably the cash side of things. If you have basis, carry, both have opportunities right now for a lot of areas. So you have harvest coming, you have grain that needs to go in town. I really think it's worth 10 minutes to sit down and say, hey, cash flow purposes, do I need to sell any of this? Do I need to look at it? Basis opportunity, what do I see there? Carry opportunity, what do I see there? And I think that's a forgotten part of the market, right? It doesn't have that lure that you have for futures. And you hear people talking about chart actions and technicals. Everything comes back to cash trade. And we need to remember to stick on basis and carry, because those are huge components to your farm operation.
Well, Christy, again, great stuff. If folks have questions, want some advice, want to reach out to you or the team there at Van Aan & Company, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can call us 1-800-648-5494. We have a slew of guys that work with us. They're all great guys to work with. And the nice thing is we all bounce our ideas off each other. And that's the key, is making sure you have kind of that well-rounded approach.
Well, and I know as well, vanonco.com. They can find you online there very easily. With that, Christy Van Aan Cheeseth with Van Aan & Company. Appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us on Market Talk. We'll get you back on again real soon.
Yes, this is perfect. Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to take a look at the cattle on feed report numbers and much more. That's on the way after the break. Back with more Market Talk right after this.
Stay up to date and listen to past episodes online at markettalkag.com. Now, back to Market Talk with Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. Again, appreciate you being here with us as we take a look at the markets and issues impacting rural America. Jesse Allen with you here. Hope you've been having a great day today. And of course, we're staying up to date with everything that's going on in the world of agriculture. And we always got to keep an eye on crops around the world, of course, and how they impact our markets here at home. And South America is one that we continue to watch, and it continues to grow and influence every year the impact that the South American crops have on the world stage. Well, Brazilian farmers, they're at the end of the second corn crop harvest. Dr. Michael Cordonier, an agronomist with Soybean and Corn Advisor Incorporated, talks about lower results.
The softening corn yields in Brazil have come down here at the end. And you saw last week, Conab dropped their corn estimate about 1 million tons, down to 114.6. USDA left the Brazil corn estimate unchanged at 116. Now, I'm at 112. I think Conab will lower it a little bit more next month, and mine might be a little bit too low, so we might come to agreement, maybe 113 million tons for Brazilian corn. Yields keep getting lower and lower because it was more impacted by the dry weather and this new pest they got down there, corn leafhoppers. So yields keep getting lower and lower as the harvest gets closer to the end in Brazil.
He says the new leafhopper infestation might change the planting cycle in South American farm country.
Each year it's getting worse, and this year got a lot worse, and it's going to influence the way they do stuff in your corn. For example, in Paraná, I think they're going to cut back on first crop of corn, shift it to the safrinha, and plant more soybeans early because they say that little moth migrates from more mature corn to less mature. So the longer you get corn out there, the more chances it has to multiply and produce more little moths. Also in Mato Grosso, they don't plant much first crop of corn. They plant a little, but they're telling farmers in Mato Grosso don't plant any first crop of corn. They put it all in the safrinha.
That first corn crop in Brazil may eventually all get planted when the second corn crop typically goes in the ground.
You don't want that first crop out there so the moths can multiply and reproduce and then be available even more so for the safrinha. And they're telling farmers choose hybrids that are more tolerant. Now, they don't have any hybrids that are completely resistant, but some are better than others. So try to choose corn hybrids that can at least tolerate it a little bit more. The moth transmits a virus, and it's the virus that causes what they call corn stunting. So the corn gets stunted by the virus, which is transmitted by the moth. The moth itself doesn't do much harm at all. It's the virus that transmits that does the harm.
No more first crop corn in Brazil would be a big change, especially for livestock producers that need to feed their animals.
In southern Brazil, yes, it would be. Now, a lot of that first crop of corn is produced by small landowners in southern Brazil. Now, the less they produce the first crop, the more the livestock guys worry because all that first crop of corn goes to livestock producers in southern Brazil. So if you produce less first crop, then they got to store more corn and buy more corn either from central Brazil or more from Argentina or Paraguay. So as a concern for the livestock guys in southern Brazil.
And according to Cordonier, there's also some uncertainty about when the Argentina harvest results might hit the world market.
Well, I just put out my first estimates for Argentina. I think the soybean area goes up a little, the corn area goes down a little, and mostly because farmers in Argentina are not very well capitalized. They're very slow sellers. They're holding on to last year's crops as much as they can as a hedge against inflation, which could be approaching 90% by the end of the year. So they want to hold until there's a devaluation of the peso, which everybody expects will come, because the peso has devalued at a slower rate than inflation. At some point, it's got to catch up to inflation.
Again, that's Dr. Michael Cordonier of Corn and Soybean Advisor Incorporated. Learn more at cornandsoybeans.com. All right, let's take a look at this cattle on feed report that came out Friday afternoon. The estimates ahead of the report were for on feed at 101%, placements 99%, and marketings at 97%. While the numbers are out, on feed 101% as expected, placements 102% more than expected, and marketings 96%, which was less than expected. Many in the trade thinking that is not friendly here to this cattle market. Cattle and calves on feed for the slaughter market in the U.S. for feedlots with capacity of 1,000 or more head, total 11.2 million head on August 1st. The inventory, again, 1% above August 1st of 2021. This is the second highest August 1st inventory since the series began in 1996. Placements at feedlots during July totaled 1.77 million head, 2% above 2021. Net placements were 1.71 million head. During July, placements of cattle and calves weighed less than 600 pounds were 410,000 head. 600 to 699 pounds were 280,000 head. 700 to 799, that was 400,000 head. 800 to 899 pounds were at 405,000 head. 900 to 999 pounds were 195,000 head. And 1,000 pounds and greater were 75,000 head on the placement side. Marketings of fed cattle during July totaled 1.83 million head, 4% below 2021. Other disappearance totaled 56,000 head during July, 2% above 2021. So looking at those numbers again, coming in here, the surprises, placements 102%, which was above the trade estimate of 99%. Marketings 96%, which is 1% below the trade estimate at 97%. So really looking at it, doesn't look too friendly to this cattle market. We'll have to see how the cattle market reacts as we get into Monday's trading session. But overall, again, not looking too friendly on the cattle side. That is the results of the latest cattle on feed report out Friday afternoon. Well, that is going to do it for the show here today. Really enjoyed my conversation earlier with Christy Van Onchiseth with Van On and Company. Just awesome insight. Great to get another perspective on the show here into what is happening in the market trade as we move forward. Coming up on our next show, we're going to talk to John Heimberg with Total Farm Marketing, get his thoughts on what's happening in the market trade. Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien will be back to give us an update on the weather and the forecast ahead as we get into the end of August. And also, we're going to be watching that crop tour here this coming week to see the results and much more. So a lot of stuff coming up here on the program. Thanks again for joining us here on Market Talk. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your day.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least. But there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.